What is up, guys? I'm Jordan, and I'm with my old man, Howie, and welcome to episode 5 of the Jacobs Dynasty Sports Podcast. Hey, welcome to the show, everybody. As Jordan said, it's episode 5 of the podcast. We're really enjoying our experience doing these shows for you. And you know, our first three shows, Jordan and I primarily talked about football games and fantasy's impact on those games. Our last episode, we had our first guest, Adam Ripps, 17-year-old card collector from Ripps Cards. And tonight, we're going to combine a special guest with football. So on the show this evening, we have the co-host of Colton and the Wolfman on Sirius XM Fantasy Sports Radio, Tuesday nights at 10 p.m. He is a fantasy sports expert. In fact, he was inducted into the Fantasy Sports Hall of Fame in 2013. And most importantly, he's a close friend of mine. So without further ado, we'd like to welcome to the show, Glenn Colton.
Thank you very much, Howie. And I have to say, in the order of accomplishments, the last one, being a close friend of yours, is probably the one I rank above the other. So it's fun to be here. And thank you for making me just your second ever guest.
I really appreciate you being with us, Glenn. Like I said, unique thing about Glenn for all the listeners out there is not only is he a fantasy sports expert, but he's also a lawyer. He's actually a big-time lawyer who works at a big law firm. He's a partner at a law firm in New York City. And funny enough, I'm also a lawyer. I don't think I've mentioned that on the show previously. And I'm a big fantasy sports fan, but I don't think I fall into the category of being a fantasy sports expert by any stretch of the imagination. So, Glenn, to start off, we thought the best thing would be for you to tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do, to the extent you want to talk about it, how you got into fantasy sports, and how you ended up where you are today as a fantasy expert. I think you've won multiple double-digit fantasy sports titles in a variety of sports, fantasy sports expert leagues, including celebrity leagues, and how you got to be broadcasting on the show with your partner, the Wolfman.
Sure, you know, happy to do it, and I'll try not to drone on, as sometimes lawyers and radio personalities can do. My first fantasy league was in 1988. I was in law school at the time at NYU, and we were bunch of guys, 12 guys, got a conference room for a couple of hours at one of the law school buildings, and we did our baseball draft. About a third of my budget on Ricky Henderson back then, who had a huge year, actually won that league, first ever league, and I won it, so I was pretty excited, and with my law school roommate at the time.
Ricky and I just got hooked onto
fantasy sports, loved it, then got into fantasy baseball more, and then fantasy football, and fantasy football, of course, has taken off. The Wolfman, Rick Wolf, one of my closest friends from college, was one of the real movers and shakers of the fantasy sports business. He was one of the original guys at CBS, at Sportsline, which was bought by CBS, then was the one of the main drivers behind Roto-World, which then has become part of the NBC Sports network. And now Rick is the president of Fantasy Alarm, another terrific fantasy sports company. So he was playing in the labor leagues, which is the granddaddy of baseball expert leagues, the League of Alternative Baseball Reality. And back in early 2000s, this was the league everybody followed. It was written up once a week in Baseball Weekly that was put out by USA Today. And Rick called me and said, next month I'm going down to Virginia, USA Today headquarters, to draft in the labor league. And I've been in it for a few years and I've never won. But I think if we play together, we could win. And to me, this was amazing. Like, I get to play with Ron Chandler and, Irwin and Lenny and all these terrific fantasy sports players. So, all right, sure. We go down, we draft, we absolutely crush it. I think we put up over 90 points out of a max of 96, won the league. And then we won the league again the next year, and we became a thing. Like, because people generally don't get along that well when they co-manage fantasy sports teams.
Right.
And then I was asked to start to write columns, and our success in fantasy sports took off. But I couldn't, you know, put full time into that, certainly, because at the time I was a federal prosecutor. I spent 10 years as a federal prosecutor in Manhattan, doing all kinds of very, you know, interesting and complicated cases, but still stuck with the fantasy sports. And to make a long story just slightly longer, when the Fantasy Sports Channel on SiriusXM started 10 years ago, maybe in the first year, the program director approached Rick Wolf and me and said, "You guys are, you know, you're the duo in fantasy sports. No one's been more successful as a duo. You guys have to do a show. Have you ever done radio?" I said, "Well, I was the station manager and program director of my high school radio station, but I wouldn't say that's professional radio." One thing led to another. We did a sound test. They liked us, and now we're in. I think we've been on the air for 8.5 years, I think, coming up on 9 full years on the air. We're in our 9th season, and it's just a tremendous amount of fun.
That's so cool. That's so cool. One thing I always marvel at when I speak with people who started doing fantasy sports in the 80s is how they kept track of the stats back then. I don't think I participated into my first fantasy league probably into 1993. I think it was basketball. And I think what we used to do is USA Today would publish the statistics for the season to date for all the players once a week on Tuesdays. And somebody would actually have to tally it up, a far cry from the automation in real time that we deal with right now.
Absolutely true. In baseball, the USA Today put out the American League stats on Tuesday and the National League stats on Wednesday. And then in the early 90s, there was a few companies. One of them I remember being North Shore Software, I think it was called. And they would keep the stats and we would get the standings in the mail once a week. Or if you really went for the super gold and platinum package, they would fax them to you on that thermal paper that would take, you know, 15 minutes to come through the machine that you had plugged into the back of your phone. It has changed dramatically. And this, you know, look, the internet and, you know, technology has changed fantasy sports from an interesting hobby that people did in person with their friends and relatives to, you know, this part of American fabric that 60 million people or more play fantasy sports. And almost all of those participate in fantasy football that we, if I understand the Jacobs boys right, we'll be talking about tonight.
Absolutely going to be talking about fantasy football. And that's a good segue into the
NFL Week 9 preview. So let's start it off with the Thursday night game. Hoping there's a Thursday night game tomorrow Kendrick Bourne, a wide receiver on the San Francisco 49ers, tested positive today, along with, I think, Deebo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, and I think Trent Williams being a...
I think it's actually, there's a standard the NFL seems to be using. I don't know, it seems to change week to week as they're trying to get these games in, but apparently a couple of these other guys were in close contact with Kendrick Bourne, and as a result, those guys are going to miss the game tomorrow.
Along with some of the running backs on the Packers, but hopefully the games play tomorrow, but I think it's just going to be total domination by Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers. You got Nick Mullins for San Francisco with, I think, their fifth string running back and backup tight end. I don't even know who their number one receiver is tomorrow with everyone being out.
It's a mess. It's an absolute mess. You know, look, if the game's going to be played, there are certain guys, of course, in the game on your fantasy teams you can play. But to me, I wouldn't be shocked because it's a Thursday night game and because they could easily move the game, you know, to Sunday or Monday with no trouble. I mean, it seems like almost a logical thing to do. I don't know when the Packers and the Niners play next week, but assuming that they play on Sunday or don't play at all, it's easy to move it. So it really is a fantasy player better watch out and watch the news very, very carefully. But, you know, the big question for me is who's going to run the ball for Green Bay? And, you know, I don't buy that they're going to rush Aaron Jones back to play this game. Mm-hmm. You have to watch the news. But for me, you know, a sneaky pickup or sneaky DFS play is Dexter Williams, who looks like he's going to get most of the carries tomorrow.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting one. I mean, because as far as these two teams are shaping up for tomorrow night, aside from Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams, there really appear to be no sure things from a fantasy perspective. And Thursday night games, as you and I have spoke with them about in the past, and I know Jordan feels the same way, you usually want to stay away from them if you can.
Unless you have like a star player.
Now, interestingly enough, Sam Brill, who you know as well, Glenn, sure, and Jordan and I are in touch with routinely, sent Jordan and I a text earlier today, which was a tweet from your good friend, Stefania Bell. We're going to drop another one of your celebrity fantasy expert friends. And it read the following. The 49ers will not have anyone available who touched the ball during their 37-20 victory over the Packers that set them to the Super Bowl. Not one player who touched the ball in January will be available to play on Thursday. Let that sink in. And when he sent that, that is really something else. And that was before these other players who were in close contact with Kendrick Bourne were ruled out of the game.
Oh, yeah. Look, they've been really badly snake bit by injuries, obviously losing Jimmy Garoppolo and George Kittle and Deebo Samuel and Raheem Mostert and even Jeff Wilson and Tevin Coleman and on and on. You know, as a Dallas Cowboy fan that lost Dak Prescott and seven offensive linemen and Leighton Vander Esch for a good part of the season and Sean Lee for a good part of the season and Chidobe Awuzie for a good part of the season. I adore Stefania. She's a wonderful person and a wonderful fantasy analyst and a great, you know, injury analyst. But we might be able to rival her for her team, the Niners, and my team, the Cowboys, for who has the worst injury bug. But either way, it's a bad situation for both teams.
No, it's definitely, it certainly fits in the theme of 2020 when you have stuff like that going on with these games. Yeah,
I don't think any player on the 49ers is a definite start. Maybe you feeling risky, want to start Jordan Reed, who's coming off an injury that's put him out for 6 weeks, but I don't really recommend starting any 49ers player.
Yeah, I think you can start Jermichael Hasty if you are desperate for a running back, but yeah, I'm staying away from this game except for Rodgers and Adams. I agree with you.
Yep. All right, moving on to probably one of the game of the days on Sunday, the 1 o'clock game, the Seattle Seahawks versus the Buffalo Bills. Showdown of two of the top quarterbacks in the league, Russell Wilson and the Buffalo Bills. I think it's going to be a complete shootout with both quarterbacks just slinging the ball down the field when they get the ball. I do have Seattle in that game winning by like almost double digits. But I expect DK and Tyler Lockett to perform as well as usual. Interesting scenario for the Seahawks running backs. Apparently, Chris Carson is not going to be tested till Friday. So I think he's going to be out of practice tomorrow as well as he was today. And if Chris Carson is officially out, I think DJ Dallas is another viable option for starting running back.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to be with the Seattle offense and the way they move the ball up and down the field and how weak their defense is, it's any running back that you plug in there is probably going to have a nice opportunity to score some touchdowns. I think DJ Dallas, he didn't exactly average significant amount of yards per carry, but at the end of the day, he did get two touchdowns last week. You mentioned the quarterbacks. Certainly, Russell Wilson continues to perform at a high level. He's probably the top contender as of now, or top two, arguably, with Patrick Mahomes for MVP. Josh Allen has certainly come back down to earth the last couple weeks. That Seattle wide receiver duo, I mean, Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf, wow. Wow, what else can you say about those two guys? I mean, personally, with DK, to me, that guy's in position to be probably one of the top wide receivers in the league for many, many years to come. And on the flip side with Buffalo, you've got Stephon Diggs, who's had a nice first season there. You've got Cole Beasley, you know, always sort of underappreciated. But this year, I think he's really, you know, his level of contribution to the team has risen up. And I think there's also an interesting situation brewing in the Bills' backfield as Zach Moss, who was really, you know, getting a lot of attention in the preseason and that was dinged up for a couple games, has sort of, you know, asserted himself a little bit more the last couple weeks.
Yeah, I think Zach Moss is now the guy in the Buffalo backfield. If he's somehow available, in your league, go get him. I like Jordan, like Seattle in this game. I don't know about double digits, but I'm certainly, given the 3 points that the current line sits at right now. And, you know, for me, I'm not a huge Cole Beasley guy in fantasy. I think the ceiling is not that high. I think, you know, his good games are 5 for 50 with a touchdown.
Right.
If he doesn't score a touchdown, it's you know, only a deep league, you know, bye week kind of guy. I do very much, you know, like Zach Moss, and I like Josh Allen in this game. I just don't know who's going to get the ball. Is it going to be Stephon Diggs? Is it going to be John Brown? Kind of hard to figure that out. So I try to stay away from the Buffalo wide receivers if I can. But the Seattle wide receivers are a must play, and whoever gets the start in the running back is a must play.
Yep, for sure. We're going to move on to another interesting game, the Ravens versus the Colts. Glenn, what are your thoughts about that one?
Yeah, you know, look, the Colts are a very, very underrated defense, and the Ravens have not been clicking. I mean, Lamar Jackson wasn't ever going to redo what he did last year, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think he rushed for something like 1,200 yards last year. And through half a season this year, only has about 400 yards, and the rushing attempts are down.
Yeah.
And he was never going to be a guy who's going to put up huge numbers or have huge success purely as a pocket passer, maybe in a few years, but not yet. So I have some concerns about the Baltimore offense going on the road. In fact, the only, I mean, you own Lamar Jackson, or I'm sorry, we don't say own anymore. You've rostered Lamar Jackson. You play him. But the only Raven that I'm sort of excited about playing is J.K. Dobbins, who I think is finally sort of rising to the top of the depth chart there, the same way Zach Moss is in Buffalo. And on the Indianapolis side, you know, I think they've come to the conclusion that Jonathan Taylor is not all that. He's banged up. I think that Jordan Wilkins is very much playable in that game. And, you know, T.Y. Hilton's a little bit backed up. So I do like Trey Burton as the tight end in that game.
Yeah, you know, Glenn, in the, before the season even started, you and I had done a couple drafts together, and you told me that you were high on the Colts defense. I actually had them on two teams to start off the season. Unfortunately for me, I couldn't get through the bye weeks with injuries, juggling different bench positions, so I had to drop the Colts defense. But they've certainly been solid most of the year. In terms of Lamar Jackson, I mean, even in the preseason when Jordan and I were talking about Lamar Jackson, I had mentioned to him some of the history when, you know, you'd see Michael Vick have these, you know, one in particular ridiculous season. And then sort of, you know, the other teams catch up on these running quarterbacks at the end of the day if you don't work to develop yourself, to develop your passing skills. And I totally agree with you. I mean, the Ravens defense is certainly stout, but on offense, until Lamar Jackson can develop himself a little bit more from a passing standpoint, that offense is going to be limited.
Yeah, I think I read a stat that in like games where teams are basically at the same level, so you have like the Kansas City Chiefs, Pittsburgh Steelers, I think Lamar Jackson's 0-6 against them when it matters the most. Like you saw last year in the playoffs, you expected the Ravens to at least make it to the AFC championship, but they couldn't even get past the Tennessee Titans and had Derrick Henry run all over them.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, as far as Jonathan Taylor goes, God, interesting. I have him on a couple teams. Every week I see in various rankings, whether it's CBS Sports or Fantasy Pros, you know, the experts' consensus has him in the top 10. Last week, obviously, he didn't deliver. But I think for players who have him, or teams that have him, you know, they have to put him out there because, you know, there's so many backfields in the league where they have these round robin type situations. I mean, there's only so much depth you have to work with on these teams. So, I mean, I personally, I'm going to have to put him out there this week and just hope that he gets the opportunity to pound the ball a little bit. But as you said, Jordan Wilkins this past week certainly looked like the more dynamic player. And Nyman Hines as well.
One last thing on this game, I will tell you, the number one fantasy defense against quarterbacks, the Indianapolis Colts.
Ah, yeah. Okay. And, you know, it's interesting with that how you mentioned the Colts. You know, Phillip Rivers comes in there. I mean, obviously, you talk about, you know, getting older, him, Big Ben, they're in that quarterback class. They came out together. They're, you know, I think that the coach of Indianapolis – has done a nice job of crafting an offense that plays to Phillip Rivers' strengths. And you're usually going to see, you know, these short crossing route passes. Hopefully the wide receivers can break some yards after the play. He likes to use his tight ends as well. But you know, at the end of the day, it's been a decent combination for the Colts so far this year.
Look, I think that's right. And he's on pace to, you know, throw for somewhere, again, close to 4,000 yards, which, by the way, he's done like, you know, I don't know, 12, 13 times in his career. And his last two games are 3 touchdowns each, so 6 touchdowns in the last two games for, you know, well over 600 yards. So Phillip Rivers coming into shape for the second half of the season for the Colts.
Yep, I think that's a big game for both teams, especially Lamar Jackson.
I agree.
So moving on, we got Carolina Panthers versus the Kansas City Chiefs. I know Christian McCaffrey owners are hopeful and will be very happy if their stud number one or number two overall pick finally returns this week after Mike Davis has been getting the main workload. I obviously think the Chiefs are going to come out and dominate as usual, but it'll be interesting to see how Teddy Bridgewater looks when he has McCaffrey, Robbie Anderson, and DJ Moore all in the field at the same time.
Yeah, I don't love Teddy Bridgewater in this game. I mean, I think obviously I think Kansas City is going to win the game. And if you own, again, we don't use the word own, if you rostered Patrick Mahomes or Clyde Edwards-Helaire or Travis Kelce or Tyreek Hill or even Mecole Hardman, you're playing all of them. For Carolina, I think you're kind of relying on some garbage time if you expecting a big game from a Robbie Anderson or from a DJ Moore. I don't like this matchup at all. And of course, if you rostered McCaffrey with the number one overall pick, you're playing him. But Carolina would be wise not to beat him up in the first game in a game they're not that likely to win. So I'm no way I run McCaffrey out there in DFS.
I agree with you on that point, Glenn. I think that Mike Davis has shown that he can carry some of the load. I don't think he should be out there for a full season. But with McCaffrey coming back, he's certainly shown that he could take some of the weight off of McCaffrey's shoulders at the end of the day. Obviously, Kansas City is going to do what they do. I mean, they're impressive week in and week out. Mahomes has been, you know, playing at about as good as he's played during his career. I think they're the class of the league, probably with Pittsburgh, who's undefeated, and Tampa Bay in the NFC. So it's probably going to be a situation where the Chiefs get out there pretty quickly, maybe run up a couple of touchdown lead. And as you said, Carolina is going to be playing from behind, and that's where some of the offensive players are going to ring up their stats.
I agree.
Yeah.
Kansas City wins this one.
Yep. I just wanted to mention a streaming option for this week. Mecole Hardman had a great week last week, and he's a special teams guy, so he can get kick returns and punt returns for touchdowns, and he's one of the fastest players on the field for the Kansas City Chiefs, so I don't think he's a bad starting option if you're in need for a wide receiver this week.
Yeah, I don't disagree, Jordan, on a team where you have buys and you need to have somebody you got to roll out there. Next game on the slate we're going to be talking about is the Raiders versus the Chargers. You know, Justin Herbert on the Chargers there, I think he's a favorite of Jordan and mine. Jordan already ran out and bought one of his jerseys. We both picked him up off waivers on our fantasy teams, and he seems like the real deal. Unfortunately for him, he's inherited the Chargers' bad luck, at least for the time being, where this side of the Falcons, they probably find the most frustrating ways to lose week after week. You know, he'll be out there with Keenan Allen. Mike Williams this past week had a very big game. He has not been consistent week after week. Keenan Allen, to me, is the most reliable wide receiver on that team. You know, their backfield has been a bit of a round robin, but it looks like Justin Jackson, I think, has been the lead dog there on that side with the Chargers. Glenn, what are your thoughts on that game?
Yeah, I like Justin Jackson. I have a lot of shares of him in best ball leagues. I did, you know, late pick of Justin Jackson, thinking, you know, Austin Eckler is not going to never carry the whole load, is not going to, you know, stay healthy. But, you know, this is, we got to be careful not overdoing the Justin Jackson situation, though. You know, you got him, you start him. For me, it's Herbert and it's you know, the wide receivers, but also Hunter Henry. I think that he's got to good get point. Back into the offense for that team, a little more possession receiver like that. So I think Hunter Henry is a bit of a sneaky pick in the game. And on the Vegas side, I love Josh Jacobs. And, you know, I think that Darren Waller is really flying under the radar a
yep.
lot.
Yep.
This is a guy that, you know, has some very, very big games, you know. And so people are forgetting about him, and I like him in the game as well.
Yeah, I have him on one of my teams. I think it's been mentioned a lot this season as far as tight ends go. There's very few consistent tight end options. I know a lot of friends that I talk to about fantasy say that maybe next year they're either going to move to a double flex or remove the tight end position. I certainly don't want to go that way. I like the challenge of trying to find guys, but Jordan and I were even talking about before we went on the air that it's frustrating where at times it seems like week after week you got to try to throw a dart and hope you end up with that guy that's going to score a touchdown. You know, Waller is one of those guys, as you mentioned.
Yeah, I think Waller, people don't realize, you know, if you're suing a PPR league, even in the bad games, like he had a quote-unquote bad game in the bad weather in Cleveland last week, it was still 5 for 27. You're still getting your 7.7 points. But in PPR the week before, it's, you know, 6 for 50 in a touchdown. So now you're talking about, you know, 17 points. The week before, 5 for 48 in a touchdown. You're talking about, you know, 15 points, 9 for 88 the week before, 17 points. So almost every week, he's put up very solid numbers, and when he's had a couple of duds, it's still not killing you, because who are you going to play? The Mo Alley Coxes, the, you know, of the world? So to me, Waller is an every week plug and play. And for those of you looking to get, you know, make a run at the end of the year, you need to get into the playoffs, week 12 Atlanta, week 13 the Jets, look in his chops for that.
Absolutely. To the listeners out there, those are the tips we want you taking away when we record these shows. I mean, and you're hearing that straight from a fantasy expert who studies this stuff all the time. Darren Waller is a strong play from now to the rest of the season, right through the fantasy playoffs.
Yeah. Next game we're going to discuss is the Miami Dolphins versus the Arizona Cardinals. You got Tua versus Kyler. Tua won his first game last week against the Rams, but I think it's safe to say the defense kind of carried the game for the Miami Dolphins last week. I think they had three straight defensive touchdowns, special teams touchdown, defensive touchdown.
No, absolutely carried the game. They're actually somebody I was considering picking up for the next couple games. I think they play the Jets in one game, possibly New England or Denver. The only thing I have to say with the Dolphins right now, they're in a little bit of disarray. I mean, they're trying to get Tua acclimated to playing in the league. He didn't get a lot of reps last week because the defensive game, as you mentioned. Now you have Myles Gaskin, who is really the workhorse of their backfield, is out for the next couple games. So you're probably going to see a Breida-Howard combination. Breida, I think, is a little banged up to begin with. I'm not really sure you could rely on Devontae Parker or Preston Williams just because right now you really don't know what you have in Tua. In fact, the other day when we found out about Gaskin being out, I actually made the comment that I thought the coaching staff might want to think about putting Ryan Fitzpatrick back out there just because the pressure on Tua so early in his career, just because of the circumstances right now, I'm just not sure if that's the best situation to be developing.
It's definitely not a lost season either, because I think they're 4-3 right now and they're in the hunt right now for a wild card spot.
No, absolutely. I mean, Glenn, what do you think about the situation with Miami and in particular their backfield?
Well, I mean, look, it's interesting because I still don't understand. I've watched Jordan Howard play in Chicago and in Philadelphia, you know, and on and on. And I thought, you know, this is a pretty good back. This is a guy who gets it done.
Yeah.
And he's scoring touchdowns as a goal line back at the beginning of this year. And then they, you know, just coach's decision not to dress him. So I think that they can, you know, make it work with Jordan Howard and Matt Breida. Myles Gaskin is not, you know, Christian McCaffrey or Saquon Barkley or Zeke Elliott. And so let's not overstate what they have there in Gaskin. They're playing good defense and they're playing smart. And I don't see Tua in practice every day. What they've seen is said he's ready. We used a top draft pick on him and he's ready. They have two very good receivers in Parker and Williams. They have a solid tight end in Gesicki. So they just need to run the ball enough to take the pressure off of Tua. And I don't think Arizona is such a great defensive team. Yeah, they have Patrick Peterson, but other than the fact that he followed DK Metcalf around the field, he usually stays on his side, which means I'm not afraid of playing Devontae Parker or even Preston Williams in this game. I think this is a shootout. I think you're going to see some really – they're going to take the reins off of Tua a little bit more, and it's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, I agree. And on the Arizona side, obviously Kyler Murray, DeAndre Hopkins, and Chase Edmonds are all must-starts. Christian Kirk, you can give probably a start to. He's been pretty good the past couple of weeks. But I do have the Cardinals dominating that game.
Yeah, know? I'm going to ask Glenn. I'm going to be selfish for a second. I'm going to ask Glenn what he thinks about Christian Kirk. I actually, in one of my leagues, I traded for him before the game against Seattle. Not a ton of yardage for him. I think he had 5 catches on 8 targets and 2 touchdowns. I mean, what do you think of Christian Kirk at this point in the season on that team?
You know, he's done a lot with not all that much activity. You know, he's got 4 touchdowns in the last 2 weeks, and you can't argue with that, but he's also played against atrocious passing defenses with, you know, the Cowboys and the Seahawks. Miami is a better defense than that. But this is a guy who, you know, doesn't get that many targets. I mean, against Dallas, he had 2 touchdowns on 3 targets. You're not going to get rich doing that. That's not going to continue. You know, so he's had games where he's had 5 or fewer targets in all but 2 of the games so far this year. So I think he's a high ceiling but a very low floor play because they have a lot of targets there, right? DeAndre Hopkins can get the ball. Running backs are going to get the ball. You're going to get the ball to Fitzgerald, you know, at least a decent amount. Isabella's a decent player who can steal some targets. So for me, Kirk is more a wide receiver 3 type in year-long fantasy and a very good, you know, GPP type of play in DFS, but not a guy you can play in a cash game.
Yeah.
Okay. Appreciate your insight on that. Glenn, the next game on the slate, we're going to turn over the floor to you for this game. It's the Steelers and the Cowboys. No, the Cowboys are in a difficult situation. We alluded to it earlier. They're having a difficult season. But since you are such a big Cowboys fan, we'll let you take it away and give your assessment on that game.
You know, it's such a shame, right? I mean, look, kudos to the Steelers. 8-0. Big Ben coming back from a year off at 38 years old and playing great. And they have weapons built on weapons built on weapons, right? I mean, they have Connor and Juju and Deontay Johnson and Chase Claypool and even, you know, Ebron and James Washington are participating, and then Benny Snell gets in and does a good job. So they have so many weapons and a solid line. So I think you're going to see the Steelers have a very good offensive game. That said, the Cowboys did play at least better defense than they had all year long. You started to see Trayvon Diggs play well. You saw a healthy you know, Leighton Vander Esch played better. You saw DeMarcus Lawrence sort of take his game up a bit. But the whole game comes down to the fact that I don't even know. Nobody knows who's going to play quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys on Sunday.
Yeah.
You know, and I have a feeling it's going to be Cooper Rush who's going to play quarterback, who wasn't good enough to make the practice squad at the beginning of the year. Let me repeat that. Wasn't good enough to make the practice squad at the beginning of the year. So I think it's going to be very hard for the Cowboys to keep up with Pittsburgh. That said, I do think that they are finally going to find a way to get Zeke Elliott the ball in proper situations. So I think he's undervalued. And of all the receivers, I think the one that I like the most is C.D. Lamb because they're going to try to get him onto the quick-hitting plays, you know, in the slot. But I just don't think I'd be comfortable unless I had to start any Cowboy not named Ezekiel Elliott.
Yep, I totally agree.
I think that pretty much sums it up. The next game we're going to talk about is, I think, one of the highlight games of the weekend, the Sunday night game. It's a rematch of Game 1 for the Buccaneers and the Saints, or Week 1 for the season for the Buccaneers and the Saints. But I think a lot has actually changed in a very short period of time by NFL standards. I've talked about Tom Brady on our prior shows. At the end of the day, I'm fascinated by the guy. He's not my favorite player by any stretch of the imagination, but I always say I love history. And I just think what he's been able to accomplish with that Tampa Bay team in such a short period of time is very, very impressive. I think they're the class of the NFC, and I think this is a statement game for them. So I would expect Tom Brady would come out and play with his A game. Antonio Brown might be active for this game, giving him another weapon. Chris Godwin, I know, practiced today, so he's going to be back. Gronk is back in shape and doing what Gronk did when they played in New England. So I do expect a competitive game, but I would expect the Buccaneers to pull out this game, possibly their statement win up to this point in the season.
Yeah, I completely agree. I like the Buccaneers in this game. I don't love what I'm seeing from Drew Brees. Like, he's going to Hall of Fame in the first ballot, period, full stop. But the arm doesn't look like it has the zip. And now we're hearing word of a shoulder issue. You know, Michael Thomas has basically not played all year. And so maybe you'll have Michael Thomas back for a full game. Maybe Emmanuel Sanders gets back. But, I mean, look, if you rostered Michael Thomas and he plays, you play him. But the only other Saint that I'm really excited to play is Alvin Kamara, who's been phenomenal. Arguably, of all the, you know, big running backs, yep. McCaffrey and, you know, you had McCaffrey and Saquon and Zeke, Dalvin Cook and Alvin Kamara, the top five picks. Kamara's far and away been the best, you know, so far. So I love him in the game. In Tampa, I'm starting Godwin. I'm starting Gronk. I'm starting Brady. I'm starting Ronald Jones. Mike Evans, you rostered him, you're probably starting him, but I think he's going to be the forgotten guy there. He's just completely touchdown dependent.
Yeah. Do you think Antonio Brown's a startable wide receiver this week?
Yes, I do, and I'll tell you why. Because first of all, there's obviously a connection between Brady and Antonio Brown. Antonio Brown went there because of Tom Brady. I can't prove that, but, you know, this word that he's staying in Brady's house, and Brady is not stupid. He is a very savvy person, a very savvy football player, and he knows that he's got to send a message to Antonio Brown: you are going to be included in this offense. You're not going to see Antonio Brown go 2 for 14 in this game. Just like the one game he played in New England last year and he scored a touchdown, you're going to see Antonio Brown become a part of this offense. And Bruce Arians is an aired-out guy. We had him on our show called The Wolfman in Studio a couple of years ago. You know, his phrase is no risk it, no biscuit. So he's going to let Tom do whatever Tom wants to do to get Antonio Brown involved.
Yeah, no, I agree with you about Brady's ability to get people involved and make them feel welcome. The fact that he's got all these big name players on this team and you haven't heard whispers about people being upset about not getting the ball. You know, Mike Evans, this guy's used to scoring 10, 12 touchdowns a year, 13, 1400 yards. You don't hear a peep out of the guy. You know, Chris Godwin's another big name. You've got Gronk there. I feel like there's something special coming together in Tampa. Knock on wood, some guys have got banged up here and there, but they have enough depth to get past it, let those guys get healthy. Their defense has been one of their strengths. Yeah. Like I said, I just feel like they have something special coming together down there. Not sure if they got enough to get over the top of the mountain, but I think they might be able to definitely make a run in the playoffs and possibly get to the Super Bowl. Go ahead,
Jordan. Oh, I just want to mention the Buccaneers' defense has been very, like, under the radar this year. They have one of the best linebacker corps in the league, and their front seven is very good with Vita Vea, JPP leading the way. And I do have the Buccaneers coming out of the NFC this year to play the Chiefs in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think they're a big threat. And, you know, you talk about playing against the quarterback. We talked about the Colts being the number one fantasy defense against quarterbacks, Tampa Bay in the top four.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So the game we're going to wrap it up with, and we skip around games from time to time, Glenn, so we're not going to hit up every game in the slate this week. Okay. Do want to mention one thing about the Lions game, and that Matt Stafford was put on the COVID list today. Apparently, it wasn't for a positive test. Again, it was this close contact standard. Apparently, there's still a chance he may play on Sunday, but not going to know till Sunday. But the last game we're going to officially hit up on and probably close this portion of the show with is unfortunately a game where there's not much to talk about. It's the Patriots and the Jets on Monday night, which, man, when you talk about games that end up in prime time and the attractiveness of them, I know the Giants have been in a couple of primetime games recently. At least they've been competitive for the most part, even though they've unfortunately found ways to lose. But the Patriots and the Jets, I mean,
the Jets may get their first win.
I would put my money on the Patriots. I mean, the Jets are just a disaster. I don't know how Adam Gase still has a job, but the GM of that team is making moves. So as of now, I would assume Gase feels comfortable that he's going to be around at least for the rest of the season. I mean, I don't even know what to say about the Jets. I mean, when a team just sinks to that level and players seem disgruntled, I don't think there's motivation there to play for the coach. It's just a bad situation. And the flip side for the Patriots is they've been underwhelming. You know, they started off the season, I think they gave people hope that there might be something there. I remember that Sunday night game with Seattle. They were very competitive. It came right down to the end. Now, you know, you've got injuries. They don't have a lot of depth. You know, whispers about Cam possibly, you know, every excuse under the book. Maybe he's still in a fog because of COVID, but certainly not what Bill Belichick envisioned for the Patriots in their first year post-Brady.
Yeah, this game is borderline unwatchable. I mean, yeah. If they move the Thursday night game to Monday night, no one's going to watch this game. I mean, it's painful. I think that, frankly, of all the players on both sides, I mean, if Jamison Crowder plays, and I don't know if he will, he's playable. Other than that, the only other playable player in the game, in the entire game, is Damian Harris. And in PPR, he doesn't really catch the ball, so the ceiling is limited. This is a game where I think if you are getting complaints that you know, from your significant other, your spouse, I don't want to be gender specific, plenty of women love football, getting a complaint from your significant other, this is a game. So you know what? I'll skip Monday Night Football this week, Ziggy.
I think that pretty much sums it up. Hey, Glenn, before we sign off on the show, and we want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us. We hope that maybe you'll join us again at some point in the future. Whenever we have a guest on, and again, you're our second guest, we want to give you the opportunity, if you want to throw something out there, a word or two about your show, you know, what you do on your show, or if you have a, I'm not sure if you have an Instagram or a something else on social, or Twitter, whatever it is, feel free to put it out there for our listeners.
Yeah, no, appreciate that. We, of course, Colton and the Wolfman, we're on SiriusXM Fantasy Sports Radio every Tuesday night, live from 10 to midnight Eastern Time. That's Sirius 210, XM87, or on the SiriusXM app, or however you stream it in the house. The written work is over at fantasyalarm.com, which is a terrific site. If you play DFS, you play season long, just terrific writers over there, led by Howard Bender and Adam Roenis, Jen Piacente, and others. It was Howard Bender who put out in the DFS playbook to start the Dolphin defense last week, made a little bit of coin from myself and a lot of other people by you know, being prescient there. On Twitter, I'm at Glenn Colton1. That's two N's in Glenn, Colton1. Hit me up on Twitter if you got football questions during the course of the week or on Sunday morning. And, of course, our show is sponsored by rtsports.com, which is really one of the best fantasy sites out there. And if you are not having a good fantasy football season, your team's had injuries, not that good, they have one of the really most fun playoff fantasy football game, and Howie, I will be ringing you up to get you in a couple of playoff drafts. It's a good time.
I'll be looking forward to that, and for sure. And to all the listeners out there, you know, Glenn mentioned he is on Twitter. If you're looking for insight on who to play, if you're trying to decide which running backs to play, you have three or four to choose from, wide receivers, whatever the position may be, you know, send a tweet out there to Glenn. I can say from personal experience, he's very good at responding. He manages through a lot of tweets over the course of a football week and on Sunday morning. But I have to say, anytime I've asked him for advice on Twitter, he's always gotten back to me in time for me to make a move. And he's personally given me a number of choices, many years, time and time again, that have paid off very successful for me. He's very bright. He's very intuitive when he comes to all stuff related to fantasy. So tweet him up and take advantage of that expertise.
Appreciate that. Very kind of you.
Okay, great, right. Glenn.
Thank you again, Glenn, for joining us. And stay tuned, guys, because we'll be coming out with another episode, episode 6, I think this weekend.
Maybe early next week.
Yep. All right. Thank you again, guys. Thank you for listening. And we'll be back next time for episode 6 of the Jacobs Dynasty Sports Podcast.